Telling me what happened to you after your 3 days or so at the Dysentery Hill camp.
We were we were put aboard these Indian lorries again and taken to a railhead at Manipur, which is eastern India. Here there was a railhead leading into central India. And we were deposited at a transit camp by the railway station. Before I go any further, I'd like to recall another instance you might find interesting. Before we had reached the Chindwin, our supplies of food had run out, and it was a case of everyone finding or getting what they could to eat. Now, we had been passing through one or two little villages in Burma, which consisted of a few huts, but more importantly, they had animals for foodstuffs. Things in particular were chickens. When you're pretty starved and the chickens are pretty hungry, it's hard work catching a chicken. But better still, this village in particular had two or three young pigs. So the more adventurous of us, including my friend Chippy from Leicester, he was a cook. He was responsible for capturing a couple of young piglets. And after he dispatched them and cleaned them, we had a marvelous evening meal, the best we'd had in months. So we all sat down. I think we had potatoes and pork. But the pork had been done beautifully, and everybody had a fill. After the meal, we thought about the morrow. And Chippy, my friend, said, all right, we'll make sure it stays contaminated free, and you can have the remainder tomorrow. But unknown to us, because of the climate, this pork had become infected. So next day, when the pork was put about, everybody was looking forward to a nice meal of cold pork with whatever was going. I've always been a fussy eater. When I saw this pork on the plate, it looked rather dark, and I didn't fancy it. So I refused, as did many others. But the majority of my squadron had a good meal of pork. And boy, within 12 hours, 75% of our squadron were ill with food poisoning. And ever since that day, when I see Chippy, I accuse him of trying to poison me in Burma with this pork. But bless his heart, he was only trying to feed us. And we weren't aware of the reaction of the pork to the heat. So I always accuse him now of trying to kill me whilst in Burma.
How long were people affected by the food poisoning?
Oh, about 24 hours, and then it cleared, fortunately. It was just a stomach bug, which we'd caught. I went hungry, but I was at least wasn't affected.
Were there any other things you could get by, you know, living off the land in Burma?
Yes, there's quite a humorous story. When we had two cooks, I believe. Chippy was one, but the other one was a more adventurous type. He was going to look out for a bullock or a cow. He found one. But do you think he could kill it? He used his revolver several times, shot it, but it didn't go down. In the end, he had to borrow a rifle from somebody somebody had a rifle, so we borrowed a rifle and dispatched the car. But we did at least have fresh meat for a couple of days, purely by having to go and find it for ourselves. And we had no regular supply as such. We just had to make do as best we could.
Well, were you able to buy anything locally as opposed to just taking it? Was it possible to...
We had no money. No. There were no villages, no shops. Mm. We used to make do. Sometimes we'd pass through a village where there might have been berries on trees. Goodness knows what they were, but we used to eat that. Sometimes we used to scrounge a meal of rice off Indian refugees. They were only too willing to let us have a mouthful of rice or two. But that's how we managed. We just didn't have any supplies.
So it was a hand-to-mouth existence.
Hand-to-mouth existence. Mm-hmm. And ever since that date, especially where water's concerned, I've had an obsession with waste. Mm. Even when my children were growing up, I wouldn't let them waste food. Mm. Either they ate it or they went hungry. I would never give them extra. Mm. And ever since that date, I hate to see food wasted.
What about water? Did you have any means of purifying water to make it safe to drink?
I think the water situation was very precarious. Burma isn't a very hygienic place to live. What streams there were quite filthy and brackish. At first we were given water purifying tablets to put in our water bottles, which cleansed the water temporarily. But as we ran out of tablets and we became hungry, we used to just take potluck. We used to try and find a stream that looked clean and satisfied your thirst from there. We had no water supply as such. But if it was a running stream, invariably we'd use that rather than the brackish one.
Did you suffer any illness due to that, to bad water?
We were often off colour, if you like, but never disabled as such.
Where did you go to from Manipur? So you got on the train at Manipur.
Well, at Manipur, when the time came, we were loaded onto ordinary cattle trucks. Just ordinary trucks, metal sides and doors. No seats, with a metal floor. But we knew that it was the only way we could get out. We were told that there was no other transport here. But if we wanted to get out of the situation, to climb aboard, which we did. We climbed into these trucks, perhaps 30 or 40 to a truck, and maybe half a dozen, maybe more trucks. I don't know who followed me, but I was just pleased to get in a truck and sit down on the floor to rest. And eventually the train moved off further into India. But I do remember that when we got to a place called Nagpur, which is a big city, we were at least transferred into carriages with seats, which was a height of luxury. But when we got to this place at Nagpur, it's one of the main stations. One of the main stations of India, a huge station, which weren't aware that there were fighting men down the road. Everything seemed normal. The station staff were normal. People were getting off with their luggage on and off as normal. Whilst we were in these carriages pulled alongside the main platforms. And one of my pals didn't like the look of this. Stacked on the platform waiting for the next big mail train to go through was a pile of liquor. Whiskey, beer, champagne, etc. was all waiting to be loaded for further transmission. And this bloke, being a bit of a poacher in civilian life, managed to secrete a huge case of whiskey aboard our train. without anybody discovering that. And after we'd moved out, the bottles were opened, and we partook of this delicious whiskey, which lightened our troubles no end. Finally, after about a day and a half, perhaps, on this train, we arrived at a place called Dhond, D-H-O-N-D, which was just outside Pune. And this was the place selected for our assembly and re-equipment in the months ahead.
What was done with you once you got to Dhond and then settled into the camp?
Well, the first thing that happened in Dhond, we received medical attention immediately. I must say that was most helpful, because the sick and the not so sick and the healthy were segregated. Those who required immediate medical attention were whisked off to the military hospitals in Pune. Those who wanted further medical treatment received it locally, whereas the rest of us, including myself, were sent on 3 weeks' leave. Now, where do you go in a strange country? It wasn't for me, because my parents lived in India. So I was sent on a 3 weeks' leave down to Bangalore in South India, where I was once again reunited with my parents. They had previously been notified that I was missing in Burma, believed dead. And of course, they were overjoyed at my return.
How on earth had that happened? That must have been a mistake.
Well, everything was so confused.
Yes.
And once we'd left the crossing place on the Chindwin, everything was chaotic. There was no organization. Nobody knew where we were. And for all intents and purposes, the authorities thought that we'd been put in the bag or killed.
I mean, had the regiment lost a lot of people, killed?
We lost a lot of people. A fairly large amount of people were killed at the various actions that were taking place. But a lot more were hospitalized because of the various diseases. My brother, who was a tank commander, was shot by a sniper in the neck, but he was one of the fortunate ones. He was sent up to the hill station in Burma called Michinar, and eventually he was flown out, so he didn't have the hike that I had to do, and I was quite envious of that. But as I say, there was so much chaos, it was assumed that all those who got to the crossing would not recover, and indeed it was a miracle that we did get out. Had it not been for those smugglers' trails, no doubt we shouldn't have.
Did you require any medical attention when you got back to Dhond, or were you basically all right?
I was reasonably fit. I wasn't fully fit, but of course the prospects of going on leave and my mother being a lady doctor in her earlier life, she soon made me quite fit. And being in good company and good food, we were soon back to A1.
And then you went back and you said that the regiment got new tanks when you got back to Dhond. They got the Grant. What did you think of the Grant as a tank?
When we were re-equipped with the Grant tanks, we didn't have far to get them. They were delivered to Pune, and we collected them from Pune, which just up the line from Dhond. We brought them back to camp, but compared to our other tanks and the light tanks we had in Burma, the General Grant was a huge tank. It was a cumbersome tank and a completely different method of steering. And the gun turrets were completely different. So it meant a complete new training program for us to get to use this equipment.
Because previously you'd been driving a truck, hadn't you? Mm-hmm. And were you now going to be a tank driver?
Yes, I was. I'd had enough of truck driving as such, and as we were very short of men, and we received some excellent new drafts of reinforcements, I elected to become a tank driver, and since then I enjoyed it very much.
Had you driven tanks at all before?
Oh yes, I mean on the docks at Suez was one. I'd learned to drive some of them there, mm-hmm. So I was aware of
the technique.
The technique of driving tanks.
You said the Grant had a different tank driving. What was different about the Grant? How did the Grant differ from the tanks you'd driven before?
Well, the steering on the Grant was much heavier. You had huge levers, which when pulled restricted the movement of that track. So you had to be quite delicate. Although the movement was heavy, you had to be quite delicate with the way you stopped it and moved. Also, up till then, we'd never had a decent gun aboard. In Burma, we had a silly little 37mm shell, which wasn't high explosive, and that was a mistake. We should have had a high explosive gun shell, because it was armoured piercing only, so to hit a Japanese target, you had to be spot on, whereas if we'd have had a high explosive shell, we'd have had far more effect. But having said that, when we got the General Grant, we had a huge gun, a 75mm, which was bigger than we'd ever seen before. And of course, that received a lot of attention and training for use with the new tank.
Were there tank ranges and other and driving areas in around Dond which you could use?
As far as I was aware, we had driving areas where we learned to drive and to get the feel of the tank, and of course the wirelesses you could use anywhere. Mm-hmm. But the actual firing of the armament was left to a later stage. But the gunners received training on the gun and the sighting of the gun, and of course the machine guns and the armament were well developed, and we learned to use those. But prior to the actual firing of the gun, which took place later.
How much notice did you have of your next move, which was when you went to Iraq?
Well, we didn't have very much notice. When we'd been fully equipped with new troops, when we had a new draft from England join us at Dond to make up our numbers, those who were well enough rejoined the regiment, whereas those too ill were posted elsewhere. We were brought up to complement and then received quite short notice that we were going to move. So preparations were made for the transport and the tanks and all its equipment and stores to proceed to Bombay. When we got to Bombay, we were loaded on transport ships in a matter of 2 days and then set sail for a destination which proved to be Basra.
But you didn't know that when you said
that. We didn't know that, mm-hmm. But next thing we knew, we landed up in Basra.
What was Basra like?
Well, we didn't know. We didn't have much contact with Basra. When we landed at the docks, we were put onto a, what do they call it? A big army depot and equipment stores. We were parked outside in a big barbed wired enclosure where we lived and slept and ate with the tanks awaiting transportation further north.
How did you get them north?
Well, we were put on at Basra, we were taken down to the railway sidings, and again we had to drive our tanks and lorries onto flat railway wagons. And after a day and a half to 2 days travel, we finished up north of Iraq onto the borders of Italy, borders of Turkey, at a place called Aleppo, which became our base and training camp for the next few months.
Were you actually in the town of Aleppo or outside it?
No, we saw no sign of human habitation. All we knew that this was Aleppo, but we were based, as usual, with tanks. We didn't have many tanks. We had a few demonstration tanks there to learn on. Eventually, we picked up tanks when we moved from Aleppo further down into Iraq.
What sort of training were you doing in that area then?
We were pretty busy in all aspects of training, including, if you please, mine clearing. We were given fictitious minefields and mines to locate. We went out on map reading exercises in lorries. We did gunnery training, wireless training, and everything we required apart from the actual vehicles that we would be using. But it kept us all in a high state of alertness.
Did you have any contact with the local population?
No, I'm afraid we had little or no contact with the local population. We were far too busy learning our skills. And in those days, we were sent to Aleppo to counteract a move by the Germans, who were proceeding to the Caucasus to obtain oil from the oil fields there. But fortunately for us, the Germans' change of plan let us off the hook.
How many vehicles did you have then? How many tanks did you have to practice with up in that direction?
In a book by one of our senior officers, they tell us there were three tanks. Three tanks for us to learn on.
What had happened to the rest of your tanks there? Because hadn't you been fully equipped at Don with Grant's?
Well, the tanks, I can't exactly remember, but I know when we went up to Aleppo, we had no equipment. We picked these up when we left Aleppo. When the threat of the German invasion that way went, we were moved pretty quickly down to a place outside of Beirut, where we were re-equipped with the later models of Shermans.
Oh. And what did you think of the Sherman as a tank?
The Sherman was a fantastic vehicle, or so we thought. But then we'd never come across the German 88mm guns.
What was it about the Sherman that impressed you when you first got it?
Well, its reliability. We could run for many miles without breakdown. At a fair speed, it had a good main armament, a 75mm gun. It had a good turret. Driving and wireless positions were good. And in fact, a pretty good tank to what we had been used to.
What about the business of steering it and controlling it in motion? Was it
gradually, the later models of the Grant was the first tank like that, but the Shermans were a much improved tank. They'd done away with the side turret and put the main gun in the main turret, and thereby making the whole vehicle far more easy to control and maneuver. And whilst we were at this place, the place called Baalbek, which is a very historic place because there were very old Roman ruins quite close by, and we could see them from the camp. But we took delivery of several types of Shermans. Some were aeroplane engines, some were diesel engines, and some were 30-cylinder Chrysler engines. And we were able to estimate the value of each.
Which ones do you think were best?
I think the diesel were the most reliable because they were far less prone to stoppages. And of course, in battle, the diesel tank was far less likely to explode than a petrol one, which had been proved later.
What kind of exercises were you doing there? Were you doing squadron exercises or battalion exercise, regimental exercises with the?
We hadn't got to the stage of regimental exercises. Mm. We'd just taken delivery of these tanks, so the main point of our training was to be able to handle these vehicles, and to use the equipment, which was the wireless. We had wireless exercises. We had gunnery tuition. And I believe there were gunnery ranges nearby which the guns were tested and fired, and the gunners got training that way.
Did you get any impression of the political atmosphere in Baalbek at that time?
No, I don't think so. We weren't at all aware of the civilian thoughts. Mm. The one good thing about stationed at Baalbek was we were within easy reach of the city of Beirut. And as a makeshift break for all the troops, we were allowed quite frequent 3 or 4 day trips to Beirut, staying in the local transit camp. Now, these short breaks made a world of difference. At last, we were in a real world. We could go into a bar and have a drink. We could go into a restaurant and order a meal. And more than that, the American University invited us to become co-members and were given all the facilities of an American university at which we could relax. So Beirut was in fact a very good town to visit.
What did you think you were going to be doing there then? Was it just a temporary period of training or...?
I can't remember how long we stayed at Baalbek, but it was one of the nicest times of our life there, because apart from Beirut visits, just down the road from the camp was a little town called Zali, which was on the banks of a small river.
Yes.
And I can remember going into the bars there with fresh mountain streams running past the restaurant or the inn. And we used to put our bottles of beer in the water before we drank them so that they chilled nicely. And that was a wonderful thing.
Were the locals friendly?
The locals were very friendly. Of course, we brought a lot of money to their vicinity. And I don't think in those days the troops didn't run riot like they do nowadays. We were far too busy with making the war work.
Did you go into Palestine at all?
We passed through Palestine when we came back through to Egypt. From Baalbek, we eventually were posted back to a place called Fayed near Suez.
How did you make that journey? Did you drive the tanks back, or how did you get them back to
Egypt? The tanks came back by transporters.
Yes.
And the transport, regimental transport, obviously brought the troops back. Mm. But that was a good move because at last we'd run full circle. We'd come back to this place quite close to Suez into a very good tented camp where all types of regimental sport.